This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Radio show. I am your host, Elizabeth Valencia, and I'm so excited to be live. This is my first time with the People Speak Radio, but it's also my first time doing a radio show. So the People Speak normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 Eastern on the BBS Radio Network. You can participate during our show with calling questions for our guest toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-888-429-5471. And we also have the People Speak Virtual Radio Auditorium Room on paltalk.com, which is the largest chat program in the world, where you can join to listen and interact. And the room would be underneath the social issues, government and politics. So tonight is a very special show. I got ahead of myself there with the excitement of this being the first time on air, leading a conversation like this. So our guest with us is Ann Watts. And Ann Watts is an educator, a facilitator, a counselor in the areas of human sexuality, family stress, self-esteem, and inner child healing work. Ann has facilitated hundreds of workshops throughout the world and lives in California. She was recently traveling in Europe and just returned back from Canada, where she led a workshop there. Her website is annwatts.com, and that is annewatts.com. And for our listeners who are listening for this part, Ann Watts is the daughter of the well-known pioneer interpreter of Eastern philosophy and religion into the Western world, whose work continues to touch many lives all over the world. So welcome, Ann.
Hi, thank you. Alan Watts, the interpreter of Eastern philosophy. So I'm happy to join you and be here and answer any questions that you have and talk about my life and history. So
I'm so excited, Ann, to have you and, you know, to tell our audience that I've had the pleasure to speak with you twice now, you know, as I prepared for this show, and it's just been so enriching. So thank you for that. And I just to begin this, you know, feel free to tell our audience, you know, about your spiritual background, you know, of your childhood. What was it like growing up?
Well, I would say that my life was not at all like most people's lives in many ways. Because of the nature of my father and his work, I was exposed to a very rich cultural diversity as I grew up. And of course, being around him as he lectured and talked to people, I was always kind of in the background, so to speak, when those things were going on. So I've never been an Alan Watts devotee follower myself, in the sense that it's so many people, you know, really listen and study and all that, his work. But I certainly am a great appreciator of his work. You know, I think when someone like that is your parent, often it's more challenging to go into the work itself but I think I got a lot by osmosis just by being around him. Certainly, the childhood that I had spurred me to a lot of the work that I do, and flavors me as a human being for sure. I have this experience because I'm in the public eye now, which is the last thing I ever thought I would ever do, being an introvert. I never thought that I would be in the public eye. And as it is, people frequently come to me and say how important Alan's work has been to them and what a difference it's made in their lives. And I love hearing that. That's always a really good thing. What's less comfortable for me is that when people come and they're like, oh, you're the daughter of Alan Watts. Oh, can I touch you? You know, and that kind of thing just makes me cringe. You know, it's like in that moment, I'm not me. You know, I'm just the conduit for somebody of my dad. So, you know, we lived a very rich and colorful life. In the days that I was growing up with my dad, we had very little money, but we lived richly. And, you know, there were many amazing and wonderful people in our lives, like John Lilly and many, many other very famous and wonderful people were a part of our lives. So that was always very interesting as well.
So we've had a couple conversations, and in those conversations you've shared that you ended up at an all-girls boarding school. So were you raised by your dad and your mom until that happened?
I was raised by my dad and mom for the first, 4 years of my life. And then my mom, sought an annulment from my father, who was at that point an Episcopalian priest. So at first I lived with her and my stepfather in New York City, in her mother had a 5-story home in New York on East 65th Street, and my mother's mother was the first woman and the first foreigner accepted into the Zen priesthood in Japan. She had she and her husband, Sokian Sasaki, started the first Zen Institute of America in New York City. And after he died, she went to Kyoto, and she studied to become a priest and became a priest because she was such a determined woman. And the priest couldn't believe that a Westerner, let alone a woman, could do what they do, and she did. And so they made her a priest and gave her a temple at Daitokuji in Kyoto, which is a really beautiful spot that I have had the good fortune to visit. And that's where I lived for a while in that home. And then my father remarried, and I was sent to live with him and his second wife, Dorothy. And unfortunately, I did not get along well with Dorothy. And by the time I was 10 years old, I had a stomach ulcer. And my grandparents, my father's parents, came to visit us. They saw what was happening for me, and they got in touch with my mother and my other grandmother. And together they made it possible for me to go and live with them in England and go to girls' boarding school there. So I was 12 years old, and I lived there till I was 17. And so, you know, during that time, it just was a very important time for me in my life. I felt like it really saved my life. And, you know, back at the time, I felt that. I just knew that they were saving my life, and I was grateful for that. But saving my life in terms of my sanity, right? Really.
So what is it that you found there that, you know, you needed growing up?
Well, you know, my grandparents treated me like a human being and with love and respect. And, you know, they really cared for me in a way that I wasn't used to being cared for, primarily by the women in my life. My father really abdicated the raising of children to his wives, and primarily his first and second wife. By the time he married the third time, children were all grown up. But and so he wouldn't get involved, and I realized that I didn't have an advocate in him to stand for me. And so that was very disappointing. And in a sense, there was a way in which I gave him up at one pivotal moment. I went to him when he was writing, and I asked him why I was being treated the way I was. And he shrugged his shoulders and said, "That's women." And that was it. And in that moment, I went into my room and I just gave him up as somebody who could be a dad to me, an advocate. And yet, in other ways, he was wonderful. I mean, when we were alone together, he was very playful. He was fun to be around. He was, you know, he loved to dance. He loved to sing. He was just, he loved to tell limericks. And so that we had some wonderful times together. And yet, you know, the reason I did the inner child healing work was because my little girl really needed a lot of healing. And, based on the experiences I had very, very low self-esteem. And so that, it was really important for me to do that healing work. And because the healing work worked as well for me as it did, it felt important for me to give others the opportunity to have those experiences and be able to heal as I had. And that's what had me create my Healing the Inner Child workshops.
Thank you, Anne, for sharing that. And as you're speaking and you're sharing that, you know, Alan Watts, you know, he gave that responsibility to the woman in his life to raise, you know, you and his children. What sort of experiences, you know, with those women could you share with, you know, with our audience that were really breaking?
Well, really, honestly, I believe that at the time I was born, my mother was already very, very unhappy in the marriage with my father. And she really wanted a son, and I was not a son. And so she took out her pain and her hurt and her disappointment on me. She used to beat me and, you know, torture me around food and all kinds of stuff. So it was very complex and, not a safe place for me to be. My sister talks about how harsh and hard it was for her to come home from, whatever boarding school she had been sent to see me being treated that way. It made her feel terrible. And she would, when she could, try to defend me, but there wasn't much defending me. So, So that was, you know, so my mother used to beat me, and then my stepmother would beat me, and so it was like just passed from one to the other. And so it certainly wasn't a safe place for me to be.
And then you just, like you said, you gave him up, which, you know, I think that many of us can probably relate to that. I mean, I certainly, you know, I don't recall the exact age, but there was a point in time where I sort of threw my hands up in the air and I was like, there's no one really that I can turn to. And that was hard. And then having to turn to myself and try to figure out life, even though I was quite young, was hard. So,
right.
So after you were sent to, you know, boarding school, then you had the relationship with your grandparents. How often did you see Alan?
Not very often, but he came to visit once or twice while I was there, and then my sister was living with our other grandmother in Japan for a while, where she met her first husband. And I was flown from girls' boarding school in England to go to the wedding. And so I got to see my father on that trip. We stopped off and visited my father and my stepmother there. And I have to say that when we were there, my mother and I could feel my stomach reacting. You know, my stomach got really tense and upset, and that was a pivotal moment for me where I thought, wow, this is why it's a good thing that I'm not living here. And I was 15 at that time, so I could just feel the effect that it had on me. So living with my grandparents was a great relief from that, and gave me some space to be myself. But it did not improve my sense of self-worth very much, much as I think they would have liked to. I think that's a much deeper, more complex thing than they were able to provide for me. And so, you know, that didn't come until a lot later in my life. And am I answering your question?
You're doing fantastic. It's just great. Flowing. You know, your father wrote in one of his books, Become What You Are, on page 8. It's what I wrote in my notes. This is the quote: "But ordinarily, we do not discover the wisdom of our feelings because we do not let them complete their work. We try to suppress them or discharge them in premature action, not realizing that they are a process of creation, which, like birth, begins as a pain and turns into a child." Mm. When I read that, you know, I immediately thought about your inner child healing work that you do. What role did Alan play, you know, through his own interest, you know, however you want to call him, an interpreter, translator, you know, what role did his work play in shaping your own inner work that you did, which eventually, you know, has led you to do workshops in this issue?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think it was very indirect. Because, like I said, I was not I didn't read his works. I wasn't a follower of his writings and that kind of thing. But it was, you know, just looking for, healing work that I found along the way. And often it wasn't even formal. It was very informal, that I found the tools that were so helpful to me. And so it was kind of like a hodgepodge of different workshops and works that came together for me and helped me with my own healing. And then I put it into a format that I felt, would be helpful for others to have similar experiences. And so it wasn't any one person's work or anything like that. It was just a series of different experiences that I had at varying workshops that really helped me to find a path to healing for myself. And you know, I'm one of those people who really believe in the saying, it's never too late to have a happy childhood. Because the little kid that lives in me now is a very happy little girl. And she comes bubbling out at any moment. So, you know, I love that it's possible to do that type of healing work. And, you know, and a lot of the work, it's so interesting though, because nowadays I can read something that my father wrote and I'll think, yes, exactly what I believe, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm going back now and reading things that he says, and I'm just, first of all, I'm amazed at how timely it is, right? That his work seems to be timeless. And it is as, important and evocative for this age as it was for when he was writing back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. Well, he died in 1973. But yeah, it's just incredible to me how pertinent his work is right here and now today and how valuable. And I've just had two different people tell me that they found him on YouTube and they listen to him every night before they go to sleep. It's amazing.
Wow.
Right? I have enormous respect for that. You know, I was telling you before, I have this experience sometimes that people have gurus. They have people that they really, they love their work. And then they put them on a pedestal. And then they find out that the guru, my father in this instance, had failings. And what they do is they knock them off the pedestal and then they just throw away the whole thing. And I'm like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. In the first place, don't be putting people on pedestals. Everybody is a human being. Everyone. And so we all have our failings. Everybody. We all make mistakes. You know, in my inner child workshop, I have a sign that says, it's okay to make mistakes. Every child should hear that. You know, it's okay to make mistakes. That's how we learn. And so love the work. Get the value out of the work and out of the qualities of the person that are meaningful to you and leave the rest. You don't have to knock them down and throw away everything. Keep what's of value because it's worthwhile.
So, that's so important. And, you know, when I was, one of the books that I read, the only book that I read by Alan Watts was for a Buddhist philosophy course that I took about 2 years ago, and The Way of Zen. And I was browsing through, you know, the comments that people were sharing, and I wrote one down. Somebody said that they appreciated that, you know, he wrote with respect, without too much enthusiasm, with no effort to convert the reader into anything, but also no self-inflicted distance that would view the subject matter entirely as a topic of purely academic interest. And in hearing you, you know, I thought about that quote again. This is The People Speak, and I'm Elizabeth Valencia talking to our guest, Ann Watts. Her website is annwatts.com, A-N-N-E-W-A-T-T-S. So yeah, Anne, I'm touched by how, as you said, timeless his work is. And I remember when I was sitting in that class, we had three or four books assigned. That was the only one I could really, you know, feel connected to. A lot of times the language and, you know, that translates Buddhist philosophy is very heavy. Mm-hmm. But this book was really, really good. And I didn't, I would have never thought that Alan Watts was not from today. So,
right.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So in the work that you're doing now, I mean, you just got back from Canada. Do you want to talk about the workshop that you did there and why, you know, how you ended up doing that, you know, sort of work? What was your path like? I mean, we've talked about your work with the Human Awareness Institute, but maybe you could give us just, you know, a couple of the steps that you took along the way that you pieced together to end up where you are now.
Thank you. I was dating a man who had been a good friend of my dad's, and he kept talking about a workshop that he thought was really amazing. He thought it was incredible, and I thought, well, you know, if this is something that's amazing and wonderful to you, maybe I should have that experience. So I know what that's, I'll know more about you and what that's all about. And so he sent me to my first workshop back in 1983 at Harbin Hot Springs in the what was then there, the conference center, which was in the stone front building. And I went there, and I was in that workshop, and I thought, wow, this is the philosophy that I want to live and breathe. I had this sense of coming home. And I thought, the only way I'll do that is if I keep coming back. And as someone who had participated in lots of workshops in the 70s, and all everybody talked about transformation, but I didn't experience transformation. I got lots of interesting and useful information, but I didn't really experience what I would call transformation. And when I came home from that first workshop with the Human Awareness Institute, I really experienced transformation in my life in all areas. And it was really amazing for me. So when I went back to the level 2 workshop, everyone was saying the same thing. And I thought, wow, this work is so powerful. And unlike so much else, it's amazing. And I had this feeling that I wanted this work to be really widespread and, to go beyond Stan's lifetime, the founder of the workshops, Stan Dale. I really wanted it to go on. And so I went to talk to him about learning to do what he did, which was one of the most terrifying things I have ever done in my entire life. Because as I've said, I'm a natural introvert. And for me to get up and think about speaking in front of audiences was really terrifying. But I was so passionate about the work, right? And just again and again experiencing transformation, people just opening up and feeling love, you know, and feeling cared about and self-caring, and it's just amazing. And so I, trial by fire, I learned to lead the workshops. And I started leading in 1985. I was thinking 30 years ago somewhere in my brain. yes, I didn't learn anything in 1930. I wasn't even born.
and I'm 30, so.
And you're 30, this, yeah.
Yeah, this wow. is a great moment to take a little break. You're listening to The People Speak, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Valencia. And we will return with audience questions after this message break. Thank you.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak, every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
You're listening to The People Speak, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Valencia, and we are now back with our special guest, Anne Watts, tonight. So, we were talking about, you know, what led you to that work, and the sort of things that you're currently working on. The inner child healing work, Anne, is something that I consider very important. I've had to work on it myself. I came from, you know, a bit of a difficult household, and now I'm studying personality and trying to see, well, what part of it was I just born with too? You know, who knows? But going back and trying to, you know, be that gentle parent to myself, as I shared with you, has been so important. So creating spaces that are gentle and safe, you know, as I'm going through the work and going through, you know, the self-study and, you know, some of the difficulties that happened in my childhood, you know, bullying, whatever it is that I witnessed. Tell us about how, you know, these workshops are set up. How do you create the environment to get deep?
Well, we create a very loving, supportive, caring container. And one of the things that we talk a lot about is choice, encouraging people to make choices that work for them. And so we say that we'll be offering them a whole lot of experiences where they can literally experience tenderness and intimacy and communication in very deep levels. And that first workshop called The Miracle of Love, by the time they're through on Sunday, they really experience viscerally the miracle of love. And a lot of people come really scared, because it's a workshop about love, intimacy, and sexuality, which I think are some of the most frightening words in any language. And yet they're core to our humanity. Absolutely core. And I've done enormous healing myself, through this work. Just incredible. And, you know, and I found my own solidity and strength through this work. And so we create the container. And people come and they do workshops, they do exercises in one-on-one with people, they do in small groups, and then we have large group discussions and talking. But that's the least of the work. It's not a lecture. It's really an experience. And then people get to choose the level of participation that they want to choose. And it's very empowering. It's very empowering for people to really get that they get to choose. And they're not being coerced, or they're not being made to do anything. You know, they really get the whole choice thing, which is beautiful, really beautiful and awesome. And it's an important part of our growing up. You know, a lot of us as kids, we never had any choice, right? There was no choice. Our parents ruled the roost and told us how we were going to be and what we were going to do and what to say and what not to say. And
what to eat and what not to eat. I believe my sister is listening. And, you know, growing up, we used to visit a buffet, and I have grown up hating them, because when we used to go to eat, it was very normal for us to have our plates chosen for us, and what we were going to eat. And, we all experienced that a bit differently, but those were hard things, you know, and then having to, you know, rebel just a little bit to find your way back around. Well, what is it that I actually like to eat?
Right.
And do I really want to eat that much? And do I really want to start off with that? Or do I want to, you know, that is a bit of a journey, and it can be fun, mm-hmm. you know, along the way. So let me ask you, Anne, would you share an example of something that you did, you know, briefly, you know, something that you did? I shared with you on the phone, you know, one of the assignments that I gave myself. But is there something that you can share?
That I did
in the inner child healing, is, you know, some activity that you did, because they can be very intentional activities, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think some of my best work has been through visualization, through, first of all, visualizing a relationship with my child, with my inner wise woman, and my child creating that. So my child had a safe person who would listen and who cared about her. And then I did a lot of restructuring of events in my childhood so that I had something else to choose from. I had, instead of, see, I think that we, how we act in the world is based on experiences and decisions that we made when we were young, and based on very, very little knowledge or awareness, we make life decisions about how life is, how people are, how men are, how women are, how relationships are. We make all of these decisions unconsciously. And then we live out of those decisions that we made until we do something different. And we are, I think the inner child is the one who tells us what we're going to do, right? We think we know with our heads, and then wonder why we keep not having what we want happen. And it's because the little kid is having us live out of the past over and over and over, and trying to fix the past, through current relationships in a way that just doesn't work. So when you give the child something different, something positive to choose from, now the child can make some new decisions and some new choices. And so that's the kind of work that I did that was really very helpful and very powerful for me. And and that I love to share with people. Is that answering your question?
Yes, thank you, Anne. Sure. And this is The People Speak. And once again, I'm Elizabeth Valencia, your host, talking to our guest, Anne Watts. You can visit her website at Anne, A-N-N-E, Watts, WATTS.com. So I know that you, next year, you will be leading an inner child workshop titled Reclaiming Your Authentic Self. Mm-hmm. And that will happen June 4th through the 9th, 2017, at the Salen Institute. It's a 5-day workshop, limited to 10 participants due to the deepness of the work. And information can be found in the Salen catalog online, and that's ESALEN.org. And you also shared with me that you will be doing a weekend workshop called Pathways to Intimacy at the end of next year. Is that, or is it this year?
That's the end of next year. Somewhere in the latter 6 months. They haven't given me the dates yet, so I don't know the dates. But when they publish their second half of the year catalog, these are workshops I've been doing annually at Esalen for quite a while. And it's a great adventure. My dad was one of the founding people down there when Michael Murphy inherited that land. I remember as a child sitting there with my dad and Michael talking about what to do with the place, and my dad was one of the first workshop leaders there all those years ago. So and I never in my wildest dreams imagined that I would be leading there. It just shows that you never know what's going to happen in your life, for sure. That's my own personal work, and then the work for the Human Awareness Institute, which is another vehicle for really profound healing for people. So, and that's at HAI.org, short for Human Awareness Institute. So if people are interested in that work, they can look that up as well.
And you've also co-authored a chapter in the book, The Marriage of Sex and Spirit, by Geralyn Gendreau, and that has writings by Deepak Chopra, John Gray, among many others, correct?
Yep, Thich Nhat Hanh, Kelly Bryson, lots of people. It's, you know, there's just a lot of different chapters that made up this book, and I think Geralyn did a beautiful job of gathering us all together and putting out the information. So yeah, it's a fun book. It's really good. Yeah. So that's the only writing I've ever done. You know, one of the less fortunate things about being the child of a famous author, in my case anyway, was as a child I always felt that my father could out-talk me about anything. And then later, when I think about writing, I've had this story in my head that it's all been said already and better than I can say it. And so that's, I know it's one of those things that's just been in the way, and I haven't taken the time to, do whatever work it would take to change that story. So I continue to not write. Even though people are always telling me I should write. So it's one of those mysteries why I haven't, but there you are. I haven't.
Do you want to write?
Well, there's a part of me that wants to write, you know, like I feel like, yeah, I have a lot of good and interesting things to say that could be valuable. And, but I don't, you know, I just notice that I don't. And so, you know, I don't, it's not one of those things that I'm going to force or mm-hmm. whatever, you know, it's that kind of thing. There was another writer I read and she said, you know, if you're a writer, you always have something with you so that you're taking notes, right? So you can always be writing something down. And I don't do that. And, you know, one of the things with me is that I'm incredibly present. I'm just here in the now. And it's one of the things I think that makes me a really good listener, is that I just be present. And it's not great in terms of my connection with my family, because I'm so present that they often don't hear from me, and I'd like to be more in touch with them. And it's one of the things I've had to work really hard at, because I tend to be right here, right now. And so that's one of my challenges in life is, you know, taking myself into different directions that I want to go in that I haven't gone in.
I'll tell you that, I mean, in our family, you know, my parents didn't get past middle school. You know, I was the first one to, you know, among my siblings from both of my parents to get, you know, a college degree, and all of that. And then my brother and my sister and, you know, all this stuff. And I have like four books that I've started, and even a friend of mine who started a publishing company, and he's like, you need to write, you need to write. I am the kind of person who carries around a book and takes notes all the time. Mm-hmm. But I know that it just takes a lot of focus. And that's actually what I'm working to cultivate. The ability to not be so, you know, to sit there and not be so scattered, which is where I am. And that leads me to ask you a question. What is your relationship with Zen Buddhism?
My relationship with it is it's something that I admire, and I'm not a Buddhist. You know, I don't call myself anything, really. I mean, I feel like I'm a very spiritual person and tuned in a lot of ways that amaze me. But I don't follow a specific path. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like there's so much to be gained from all the different ways that there are. I don't espouse a particular path myself.
And in the work that you're doing, really, you get to, you know, work with people of very diverse backgrounds, and you sort of, you're really holding a space for them, you know, regardless of where they come from, right?
And I feel it's a very sacred thing. You know, I do believe in that. I treat it with the greatest respect and honor, and I feel really blessed that I get to do the work that I do. I feel like it's a gift, and a gift to me, and it's a gift that I love to share. And so all of the work that I do is something that I feel blessed to get to share with people, and so that means a great deal to me to have that experience.
Is there anything that you haven't shared in an interview and that maybe you would like to take the opportunity to share here? You know, whether it's related to your childhood, growing up with your father, you know, that everybody knows you by, and, you know, is there anything about Anne that hasn't been said, or maybe not in a radio show?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the thing I talk about my father and my family, I rarely get to talk about, you know, how much I love my husband, and we've been together well over 30 years, and we met through the Human Awareness Institute, and I think that has greatly influenced our ability to have an ongoing, lasting, loving relationship. You know, how much I love being a grandmother, and I have three grandsons, two by my son, Michael, who is a musician in Santa Barbara, and one by my daughter, Mira, who is a dancer and has a dance studio, and you know, I don't get the opportunity to talk about that side of my life that much. So, and it's a deeply important part of my life is my children and grandchildren and family really means a lot to me. And so, I'm very proud of my children. I think they are amazing human beings, and they too, give a great deal to the world through their work. And, so it's pretty amazing. Seems to be in the DNA for us to be, giving to the world, you know. And that's another thing I was thinking about. I feel like one of the things I inherited from my father is my listening skill, because he was a very deep listener. And that was a very beautiful thing about him, was how well he listened to people and tuned in, and how effective that was for those who had the opportunity to be heard by him. So I feel like grateful for that gift.
That's beautiful, Anne. And I was going to ask you, you know, what gift did your dad give you? And you just gave us that. And I shared this with you, but I think it's good for, you know, those who tuned in, just because you are Alan Watts's daughter, that, you know, I shared with Anne that, you know, if Alan Watts was alive today, I would be like, oh my goodness, I know your daughter. It's a flip of the script. And,
right.
You know, we all connect, right, to who we connect to. And, you know, I really deeply connect to you. Today I found myself going on Facebook and liking the different Alan Watts pages. And I even left, you know, comments about this, you know, interview with you, and left a comment for someone directly. And I was reading through his quotes, and it's just amazing how you, you know, in some ways, he led me to you, because when you were brought up as a possible person for me to interview, you know, I knew immediately who Alan Watts was, but I didn't really, you know, feel super connected. But now it's the opposite. It's like, I want to connect to him to kind of get a feel for you. So thank you so, so much for your time, for sharing what you've shared. I hope our listeners have something that they've taken away, maybe something they didn't know about your father, and appreciate the other parts of his life that are not in his books.
Right. Well, great. Well, I appreciate the interview, the opportunity to speak. I appreciate your willingness to get to know me as a human being, as well as the daughter of Alan Watts. that means a great deal. So thank you for that. It's been lovely getting to know you, Elizabeth. Oh, and there was one thing I wanted to say to you. You know, you told me that you're a single mom. And I just want to say that it takes a lot. That in itself takes a lot. I was a single mom, and I know. And so, you know, the fact that you don't get around to writing, you know, well, you've got a lot on your plate. You've been in school, you know, you've been being a mom to your kids. You have a daughter?
Two boys, 13 and 9.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, I forgot.
You're good.
Yeah. So
yeah, they should be listening right now, actually.
Oh, well, I think they're very lucky to have you as a mommy, and I know that you do your best to be the best possible mommy, and that means that sometimes you're not going to do all the things you want to do because of that. So I just wanted to say that to you.
That is the gift that you're giving me for this show. And I have to thank, you know, our engineer, Don, and thank our producer, Mike, for just going with me. I mean, they didn't really even know me, and here I am. And it's so exciting. You know, there's such, yeah. I'm so curious about people, and I sense the same type of curiosity in you, and that's enlivening and refreshing. And you have the type of energy that sometimes is difficult to find because we're so enclosed, and afraid to be, you know, afraid or just not used to being vulnerable, with ourselves and with others. But thank you so much. And you've been listening to The People Speak with your host, Elizabeth Valencia. Honored and filled with gratitude for this conversation with our guest, Anne Watts, daughter of Alan Watts. Thank you so much for sharing yourself, your time, and we hope to be able to host you in the future again. It would be my pleasure to talk to you and take it further in a different direction, see where it goes. I remind you to visit her website at annewatts.com. That's annewatts.com. And thank you all for joining us and participating and for joining me on this journey. Good night, everyone.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief of us, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.